CBSI in the World, I'm John Batchelor. The American economy, the global economy, watching inflation. Inflation right now in the U.S. is unacceptable at 5%. Yes, it's moderating from where it came from, 9%, but still not close towards the target for the Federal Reserve, the monetary policy, of 2%, meaning there is a guessing game going on in the industries that depend upon interest rates, and in especially in the markets, looking to start again, having spent these last months in a bear market. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, is here, because eventually inflation and politics go together, hence this headline in the Wall Street Journal editorial most recently. Bidenomics, 2 years of falling incomes. Americans haven't had a raise after inflation in 24 months. Joe, a very, very keen observation is that inflation is the one thing that can disrupt a political cycle. Therefore, it is in everyone's interest in Washington to cure inflation, at least to make it clear that we're going in the right direction. That depends on Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve. However, I observe that Mr. Powell's remarks, at least since he started raising rates sharply since the spring of 22, have been, I depend on the data. I depend on the data. If the data says we're not close to 2%, we're going to raise rates. The expectation now, the next Federal Reserve meeting is May 2nd and 3rd, is that the governors will stay to that expectation. We're at 5%. We need to raise rates again, a quarter point. Is that all correct, Joe, that the Federal Reserve will follow the data and the data says that interest rates must rise perhaps through the rest of the year? Thank you.
Well, John, they do seem to have been signaling that there would be at least one more rate increase at the next meeting in May. So I wouldn't be surprised if they stick to that. And it will probably be a small increase of only a quarter percentage point. But, you know, the problem with all along with all of the talk that they've been doing about following the data is that it doesn't really say which data. So, I mean, certainly the inflation rate is an important piece of data, and that is still very far off of their 2% target. But the question that they run into is that they've always said that they believe that their policy operates with long and variable lags. So they ask themselves, are there things that we can look at in the economy that would signal that inflation will soon hit the 2% target based on the policy decisions that we have already made? In other words, when do they know that they can stop, if they can stop, before inflation gets to the 2%, because they have set in motion the developments that will actually bring it down? And I think this is really going to become the story of the summer, because they will argue, they've argued all along, that one of the indicators that they look at most closely, it has to do with the labor market, and that if they see signs that the labor market is softening, then that would mean that declining inflation would be right around the corner. I am a bit skeptical that that's true. I'm not sure that there is really solid economic theory behind that. And so I think that there's going to be a real danger that because we have all of the pain developing in the financial system as a result of higher rates, and because there's going to be a lot of political pressure on the Fed not to raise rates so high that they really do trigger very high unemployment, that they might start de-emphasizing the fight against inflation a little bit. And you'll start hearing an argument that, we've done enough already. If you just wait on the back of the policies that we've done, the inflation is going to come down. And we know that because of all of these other tea leaves that we happen to be reading in our meetings.
I've waited to ask you this, Joe, because we developed earlier the question, is the bank crisis over? And the answer is nobody can tell. It may be. It may be that enough was done by the Federal Reserve and the Treasury to stem the anxiety. But the question is this, do you raise rates in a bank crisis? Is that theory written down somewhere? Or the other thing, in a bank crisis, don't you cut rates?
Well, I think they're going to have this real dilemma here, because we could end up in that worst of all possible worlds where you have some kind of financial accident, whether it's a full-blown panic or crisis or some other serious problem somewhere in the financial system, at a time when you also have, you know, mixed signals from the labor market, which the Fed is looking at whether or not they should. But you also have the very high inflation, and the Fed is going to have to pick which of those fires it wants to fight. Now, I think you could make a good argument that the Fed should focus exclusively on the inflation problem, because it's very difficult for anyone in the else in the economy to figure out what they should be doing, including how best to deal with a banking crisis. If this is going on in an environment where your price signals for assets and consumer goods and everything else are going completely haywire, but that is a very, very difficult political call for the Fed to make. And I think that there's every reason to suspect that if it comes to it, we would end up in a situation where they're going to decide that they have to let inflation be what it will, that they have to prioritize dealing with whatever might happen in the financial system.
To be determined. I want to veer for a moment to something that is important to recognize, the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. This brought peace between Northern Ireland and Ireland, between the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland 25 years ago. Celebrating or commemorating this are significant political voices at the time. Tony Blair, then Prime Minister, President Bill Clinton, then President, George Mitchell, who led the negotiation for the Good Friday Agreement. Here, 25 years later, not recovering all the facts, the violence stopped. The Brexit story crashed into the Northern Ireland Republic of Ireland border, and I lost track. So Joe's here. He's my guide on Brexit. There's a new prime minister, Rishi Sunak. He is sometimes associated with Brexit, sometimes not. Has the Good Friday Agreement served its purpose, Joe? Is peace at hand? And is Brexit solved so that there's smooth commerce between Northern Ireland and Ireland? I'm told that thousands of people commute every day, and that there's generally a sense of order. Is that regarded the same in London?
Well, I think it's certainly the case that there were a lot of successes arising from the Good Friday Agreement 25 years ago. And I think that although more recently there have been murmurs that there might be some growing security concerns again, for the most part, the agreement succeeded in stabilizing the region and putting it on a path to greater stability in the future. But I think that the problems have come to the fore, and this really, it was highlighted by the entire Brexit debate, was a tendency toward neglect. I mean, one of the criticisms all along is that the Good Friday Agreement required both the Republic of Ireland and the British government, and then also the local government in the Northern Ireland province, to continue making a lot of institutional changes over time that would have really entrenched the Good Friday Agreement. And a lot of that didn't happen because I think that there was a certain extent to which people lost interest in the problem politically once it appeared to have been solved. And I think that that really came back to hurt everyone in the Brexit process, because Brexit revealed the extent to which the Northern Ireland peace process was still a work in progress, and in some ways was incomplete. And for years now, the parties have been dogged by a bunch of the problems arising from that incompleteness about the Good Friday process.
Rishi Sunak, is he perceived as less controversial on Brexit as Boris Johnson? Because I remember wherever Boris Johnson showed up, the question of Brexit and is it done yet would appear. I don't see that with Mr. Sunak's headlines. So has that made things better for resolving these conflicts?
Well, I think Sunak has been much more of a pragmatist, which has been very helpful. And then I think that he also is perhaps somewhat less a creature of the pro-Brexit wing of the Conservative Party in British politics in the way that Boris was, which made it a bit easier for Rishi to reach some compromises at key moments to get a deal done. But again, I think that the danger here is going to be that it isn't really clear to me that this deal is a permanent way forward, but the risk will be the same situation that happened 25 years ago, that once you're over the initial crisis phase, a certain, you know, lack of attention starts to become a problem.
Is the 25th anniversary gaining attention on British media, in the newspapers, on radio, on television? Do they talk about it?
Oh, I think there certainly was a lot of attention at the time of the anniversary, and particularly as President Biden was visiting the region, precisely because people who have been here much longer than I have remember how difficult it was before that agreement and the times that there would be a lot of terrorist threats on the British mainland and in England and in particular, which sort of got resolved by the Good Friday process. So I think this was an important period, not just for Northern Ireland, but also for the rest of the United Kingdom.
There's protests in Mother Britain, not violent this time, although there is one death, the death of a very prominent and veteran steeplechasing horse. So when we come back, Animal Rising, Just Stop Oil, and Extinction Rebellion, the three of them are right now very active and vivid in the life in London. Joseph Sternberg, editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.